Azania Musaka on 702.
It's 9 minutes past two, and we bring you Matter of Fact. It is the second Monday of the month. And now we're joined by Kate Wilkinson, and she is a senior researcher at Africa Check. This is where we test claims, take claims that have been made in the public arena. Like we got last week, Kate was a guest on Eusebius' show when Mayor Herman Mashaba was there. I was like, go, Kate! Because you feel my energy urging you, like, yes, Kate, the power of data. How are you?
I'm good. Yeah, we had some interesting feedback from that show. It did. Well, I think the mayor got a bit heated. From our perspective, when I'm talking about the work that we do in Africa Check, it's not my opinion that I'm sharing. Mm-hmm. It's not a difference of opinions between me and the mayor or between anyone that I fact check. I look at what someone said and I look at the best available data and I see whether it's true.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I very often don't see our engagements with people as heated, because I'm just a conduit for information. I'm just telling you what the data says.
Yes.
And that in some cases it will support you, in some cases it's at odds with what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
And really hoping to reach some understanding and, you know, being able to move forward and share more accurate information. But yeah, we had some support. We had some pushback from people who support the mayor, and the statements he's been saying. But I hope that it helps to increase understanding of the topic and really reinforce how important it is that when it comes to very sensitive issues like migration and xenophobia, that we rely on rigorous data and that we don't let our opinions guide our beliefs and government policy and interventions, because that's where we can sometimes go a bit off course.
And 20 and 80 is an important difference.
It is. So, you know, the mayor has claimed for a while that either 80% of the inner city or 80% of hijacked buildings are filled with undocumented migrants. And there are a couple of different data sources that suggest it could be around 26%. Mm-hmm. There was a raid on five buildings in Doornfontein, where they found that around 25% of the residents were undocumented migrants. And this is, we're not naive in saying that this is the figure, because experts have told us we know that not all migrants or undocumented migrants are going to be captured in these surveys. But the onus is on the person making the claim to substantiate it.
Absolutely.
And the mayor to date has not been able to provide any information to support his claim.
So you'll be sitting down with him pretty soon?
Well, we hope to. We'd really like to sit down with the mayor and his team and discuss this, not to point out why they're wrong, but to really provide a resource and say, this is the available information. If you want to get your numbers right, this is what you should look at.
Yeah.
Because what I was thinking about over the weekend is, if you're a mayor and you're engaging with your residents in the city, and you're branding 80% of them undocumented migrants, imagine if that's not true and it's actually much lower. How does your attitude, your engagements with possibly actually South African citizens, how does it affect that engagement? How does it make people feel to be treated in a way that is based on a statistic that suggests that you're not from this place? But, you know, if listeners want to get into the nitty-gritty, we have the report on our website. We have the podcast on our website.
Yes.
So they can catch
up
there.
They can go and listen to that. So that's africacheck.org, of course. So today we're looking at two claims. And the first one is around the contribution of South African townships to the economy. And this was a claim that was made by the chief executive of Business Advisory Services at Entbank, mm-hmm. Who wrote on LinkedIn a post in May, in fact, and it said that South Africa's townships contribute up to 100 billion rand to the overall economy. Is there truth to that figure?
Yeah, so that's what we wanted to find out, because there is often a lot of talk about the potential of townships economies.
Yes, because we want to revitalize. And
yes, and, you know, there are people who want to make money off the townships. There are people who want to, you know, help people make money in townships. And so we saw this figure, and a few people got in touch with us and said, you know, does this check out?
Mm-hmm.
And so we got in touch with Vuyo Townships' contribution to South Africa's gross domestic product, what we call GDP.
All townships.
Yes.
Across South Africa.
Across South Africa. And he also said that the actual report where he had got the number from was from the Gauteng Department of Economic Development.
That's a nice source.
It sounds like we're heading to the right direction, doesn't
it? It's like the person could send you exactly to where they got it, which is great.
Yeah, so we hopped onto Google. And often in our reports, you'll see, you know, that the first line in this paragraph is a Google search brought up this strategy draft staffed from the department. And the reason we say that is, first of all, so it's transparent, but also because, you know, anyone can do this. It's not rocket science. So we hopped onto Google and we found a draft document called Revitalizing the Township Economy.
But Kate, it's more fun when you do it. I feel like you're saying people got in touch with you to say, Africa, check, just check it. Just check it.
You
want to know. It's more fun when you do it.
We'll always do it for you, but we also want to empower you.
Exactly, got you.
And in this draft document, it said, and I quote, according to the World Bank study on South African townships, their combined economy is estimated at 100 billion.
Mm-hmm.
So then we found that World Bank report and it was called Economics of South African Townships,
mm-hmm.
but it didn't have the figure. And this is what often happens is that you'll read what seems like quite a legit report that cites, has a figure and it cites a source, maybe in a footnote. And then you quickly rush to that report and you open the report and you quickly read it and there's just nothing there.
Wow.
And it happens quite often. And so we had a look in this report. This figure wasn't in there. But what we found was that the study was published in 2014
mm-hmm.
and it looked at the economic conditions and the types of businesses in one township and that it was Diep Sloot.
Mm-hmm.
And what it estimated was that the equivalent gross domestic product for Diep Sloot was 671 million Rand.
Right. So did they do some extrapolation?
Yeah. So that was our first assumption. And so we got in touch with one of the authors of the World Bank report. And the first thing he said was that no extrapolation should be done on the basis of this study.
Right.
And he was very, very adamant about that. And he said, that's because we haven't tested and we can't assume that Diep Sloot is an average South African township. We can't assume that Diep Sloot and the economy in Diep Sloot is representative of all townships
yes.
in South Africa. And they really cautioned against that. And it's actually not clear that that's what was done.
Mm-hmm.
It might be one of these weird sort of statistical leaps that we see where a number gets flipped and flopped and turned into something else and suddenly gets republished.
Mm-hmm.
But this appears to be a study that may have informed it. But they also, he also pointed out something which is quite interesting is that if we look at the latest GDP figures for South Africa at the end of 2017, we see that South Africa's GDP was at 3.1 trillion rand.
Yeah.
And even if we assumed that the 100 billion figure is correct, that would mean that just over 3% of South Africa's GDP was
coming from
townships. And he said that that sounds really modest.
Yes.
It sounds quite low.
Uh-huh.
But the difficulty when it comes to monitoring and estimating GDP is that the way that it's done is that what it does is it looks at activities, economic activities that add to GDP. So we're looking at things like, you know, if you build a house or
yes.
you pay for a haircut, this is economic activity which is recorded and it's going to create value.
Mm-hmm.
But often in townships, we have, first of all, activities and businesses where sometimes the transactions aren't recorded
mm-hmm.
or it might be unpaid work or this isn't particular to townships, but there could also be illegal work occurring where records aren't being kept and there actually isn't a way
mm-hmm.
to monitor yeah. the economic activity in townships.
Yes.
So, you know,
so, yeah, the informal parts of our economy are by their very nature very hard to analyze or monitor.
Absolutely. And that's what experts also said to us is that, you know, if we wanted to get a good rigorous figure for what townships were contributing to GDP,
mm-hmm.
we would have to have a specialized study of townships, not just one township. We'd have to have townships across the country, big and small, different racial groups, different levels of prosperity. So we would have a representative sample from which we could extrapolate and draw conclusions.
Yes.
So when we look at this claim, you know, when we spoke to experts, it's the figure of 100 billion, which is often attributed to the World Bank. It's not in a World Bank. It's not in a World Bank report. And what experts actually think is this figure is maybe a ballpark. It's maybe a bit of a thumbsuck that people have thrown about to get a feeling for the size of townships' economies.
Yes.
But unfortunately, at the moment, we can't say how much they're contributing.
So there's no We still don't know what the source is, where this figure comes from.
Yeah, we don't know. And often, you know, I sometimes like to think about how when we all first got email, we'd get those chain messages. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you'd get a chain message and then you'd send it on. Maybe you'd change a number because you wanted to make it sound a bit better or worse, or you wanted to put your touch on it. And we often see that sometimes with reports and studies and research papers, is that, you know, someone's just going to get a feel for something and we're just going to tweak something, or maybe it was just a mistake.
Yes.
But what's important is that, you know, we need to put our thumb on these numbers, which infiltrate all our policy documents and ideas about
Absolutely.
Our economies if they aren't based on good research.
Yes, we reject this one.
So experts said they wouldn't reject it too strongly. It seems like there could be some truth, but we just really don't have an idea about the size. But it's a really interesting idea to unpack, and there's a lot more detail in the report if people want to have a look at it. And if a listener maybe knows where this figure comes from,
yes,
fact check with us. Tweet us, email us, help us find where this fact came from, this false fact, as it appears, mm-hmm. And we'll give you full credit.
Yes.
You can be part of the Africa Check team.
And next time someone also uses it, you can point out that, okay, 100 billion is not a World Bank figure, and no data confirms that township contributions amount to that much when it comes to their contribution to their economy. Wow. All right. This mystery is not solved. We weren't able to put anything conclusive to that, but that's also okay. The second claim that has been made has to do with online crime. So in an article on Times Live, a picture of online crime in South Africa was captured in an article. And the statement that was made was that South Africa has the third highest number of cybercrime victims worldwide, losing about 2.2 billion rand a year in cyber attacks. And this was in a June article, and this article had to do with digital security. So where do you start with this one?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that cybercrime and online crime is really at the front of everyone's minds these days. We're on our phones, mm-hmm. we're on our laptops, our computers. There's very little of our life that isn't touched.
Yes.
By the online world.
Yeah.
And there is a lot to lose on the online world.
Mm-hmm.
So a few people also asked us to have a look at this claim. And in the report, the statistic about us having the third highest number of cybercrime victims and the country losing 2.2 billion a year was attributed to the South African Banking Risk Information Center, also known as SABRIC.
Yes.
Which is a bit less of a mouthful. And we got in touch with SABRIC and we asked them, you know, this statistic is attributed to you. Could you tell us a bit more about it? Where did the numbers came from?
Mm-hmm.
And they were pretty adamant when they got back to us, and they said, we have never made a public statement about this in South Africa. We have never said that South Africa has the third highest number of online victims, and we've never said that it amounts to 2.2 billion rand
mm-hmm.
per
mm-hmm.
year.
Mm-hmm.
And that's sort of like stumping your toe as a fact checker, because it stops you in your tracks, because you think, well, my plan now isn't going to work. I thought you could give me all the answers.
Exactly. So where did you turn to next?
So we actually did a bit more digging, and we found that a lot of the report was based on a press release from a public relations firm that had been sent out to a number of media houses and had informed this news report. And apart from attributing some of the information to SABRIC, it also attributed some of the numbers to Norton, which is a digital security company. And some of us might have Norton Security on our devices.
Yes.
And when we got in touch with Norton, they pointed us towards a 2013 report which they had published,
mm-hmm.
which found that 73% of South Africans were victims of cybercrime in 2013.
Mm-hmm.
And this was behind Russia in first place at 85%. And China at 70%. And it also estimated in the report that in South Africa, the cost of cybercrime was about 2.9 billion in 2013.
Oh, wow.
And this information came from a survey mm-hmm. of a number of adults aged 18 to 64 in 24 countries. And in South Africa, they actually surveyed 500 people who owned at least one mobile device.
Mm-hmm.
And They were asked a number of questions, and they were asked whether they had been victims of a wide range of online crimes. So, for example, you know, did you have a computer virus on your computer?
Yes.
Or on your smartphone, did you just one day find that there was an app on your smartphone that you hadn't downloaded?
Mm.
Had you been a victim of phishing? Have you identified have you experienced identity theft? So these are the sorts of different crimes that were included.
From these 500 people?
Yes.
Right.
But importantly, we have to remember this data is now 5 years old.
Yes.
And
Things have moved very quickly.
What experts told us is that when it comes to the online world, things move at a lightning pace.
Mm-hmm.
And even if that data was 100% accurate in 2013, there is no way that we can use it to substantiate claims which are being made about the current situation.
Yeah.
But what Norton did say was that their most recent survey from 2016 found that overall 67% of South Africans had experienced some form of online crime.
Yeah.
And here's the kicker. They estimated that the annual cost of online crime was actually 35.2 billion in South Africa. But that's a lot of money. But there isn't a lot of transparency about the methodology.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not entirely sure, you know, who was surveyed, the questions they were asked, how it was weighted, how representative it is. And until we have more information on that, we just have to be a little bit cautious about how we interpret
these
statistics.
What happens then when, that kind of potentially verifying documentation is private or is confidential, not shared?
So that's really interesting because we often see in South Africa large corporates, I won't name anyone, or large research organizations releasing reports and studies which make quite startling claims about the state of South Africa.
Yeah.
And you maybe get a one-pager with all these statistics. And then you contact them and say, oh, can I have the whole report? And they'll say, yeah, sure, no, but it costs 15,000 rand.
Wow.
And you need to be very careful if you're using that information, unless you've seen the original documentation. Mm. You can see exactly
how it was conducted, because that matters as well. That matters a lot.
And I also think there should be more, you know, these corporates and research organizations should be held to a greater, you know, bar, because they know that, you know, research methodology is important, and they should know that if they want their results to be taken seriously, mm-hmm. they should be accompanied with that information.
Mm-hmm. Put it on your website, even though
Absolutely. We
won't be able to download it, but at least we can see exactly what was done with that. Yes, and it takes money, it costs these organizations money. Let's go to Peter Gosch. Peter is an expert in corporate governance and anti-corruption, and he just wants to comment on the survey. Good afternoon, Peter.
Hi, good afternoon.
Yes, thank you for joining us. What are your thoughts?
Thank you for having us again. I think that one needs to be very careful in relying on a survey of 500 people
mm-hmm.
commenting on a subject as sensitive as this. We have this going around quite a bit in our country. One of the examples is the recent release by the Insurance Crime Bureau saying that insurance crime costs in the region of several billions of rands.
Mm.
These are absolute thumbsucks, educated guesses. And really, you can't even use a survey of 500 people to reflect anything.
Right.
So my view is, these are shallow stats. One shouldn't be heading in that direction, and rather head in the direction of saying law enforcement needs to help us start keeping more reliable stats. You will not find reliable law enforcement stats on these matters,
mm-hmm.
because law enforcement simply captures a crime as either fraud, corruption, theft, or related.
Yes.
So thumb-sucking is not helping us solve the problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely, because these claims then are so startling by their very nature at the same time. So they're alarmist, and this panic ensues. Meanwhile, It's not a reliable sample, as you've said, Peter.
It's like a while back people used to say South Africa's got the highest death rates in the world, and not respecting the fact that we have political unrest. And political unrest inevitably leads to unfortunate losses of lives.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's not a reflection of, you can walk into my historical township in Newlands East Durban and say, well, you walk into Newlands East Durban and 25% of people are killed every day.
Mm-hmm.
When in fact, that belongs to one particular area like Poypotong. Or Marikana in one incident. So
yes.
We can't really move away from these unempirical guesses.
Right.
As an academic and writer on the subject, I just think it's very shallow and immature for professionals to reflect on these matters, and worse yet, to quote professional bodies as being the source of these data.
Hmm. Peter, thank you for your thoughts. That's expert in corporate governance and anti-corruption. So what sources do we trust then? Because as we know, data gathering processes are not necessarily solid.
Absolutely, and I think Peter raised some really important points. And another point when it comes to this issue is that a lot of these surveys are often conducted online, and if you are surveying people about online crime and you're only accessing people who are online, you're probably going to have a selection bias where you're going to be getting in touch with people who are more likely to fall victims to these crimes.
Yes.
So unfortunately, when it comes to this claim, we also come to a bit of an unsatisfying conclusion like we did in the previous one.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to the claim that, you know, South Africa has the third largest number of people who fall victim to cybercrime every year, we see that it's actually based on a report from 2013, which is completely outdated, and we're not entirely sure whether the way that those numbers were constructed and surveyed is reliable. And also when it comes to the figures and the numbers of the cost of crime,
mm-hmm.
we don't have reliable estimates. And like Peter said, this is because often people don't disclose the actual cost of the crimes that they fall victim to.
Yeah.
So more research, better research, will provide a better understanding so that we can tackle these problems.
Yes, and more policing. Beloved says, thank you, Kate, for this important, and in caps, by the way, important work. What I also love about what you do is that you are so eloquent in explaining what is and what it's not. Congratulations to you and
beloved.
Africa Check. Comes from Beloved on the SMS line. So if you want to look up these reports that we've touched on, or Africa Check's interrogation of particular claims, not just these ones, but a whole lot more, it's quite a great resource. In fact, if you're a researcher or if you are want to also interrogate or question a particular claim, it's a great resource. It's africacheck.org.